Middays with Mannix and Mannix. We are back on this Thursday, and now it's time for us to talk some New England Revolution soccer. The Revs, second place in the Eastern Conference going into last night. The showdown with the first place, Nashville SC at Gillette Stadium. Here to tell us all about that and everything Revs from the past week and what's coming up this week is the New England Revolution broadcast voice, Brad Feldman. Brad, thanks for being here on the short turnaround after the match last night. How are you?
Howdy, Jeff. Yeah, good to be with you guys. I'm great. You know, a little bit of a reality slap for the Revs last night, but you know, it was never going to be smooth sailing all the way.
No, it was not, and you did lead with the headline that the undefeated start at home is over, and it's over in a big way with a 3-0 defeat against Nashville SC last night. Ultimately, what do you think broke down for the Revolution?
Yeah, they weren't clinical in the final third, even though they had some really good build-up play. In the first half hour, they were sort of punching even weight, and Clyde Sims, former Rev, who was filling in for Charlie Davies as the analyst, pointed out that the way the teams were playing, you know, somewhat cautious and cagey, and meant that it might take an error by one of the two teams defensively for a breakthrough and a goal. And that proved to be the case. You know, really all three, or I'd say the first two Nashville goals came off of Rev's errors. In transition, you know, some people are blaming Matt Polster getting his first start in several weeks for that goal because he got sort of corkscrewed by Christian Espinoza. But it was the giveaway. It was the sort of scrambled marking of the late runners in the box. And then, obviously, Matt Turner lost his footing trying to play out of the back on the second one. It was a bad moment, and you feel bad for Matt. You go heading into the World Cup, right? Like, if there's a book on him, one of the things has always been not great with his feet. Not terrible, right, but not world-class standard. I think he was put in a very bad position. You know, the back pass had the right zip on it. Warren Madrigal, the guy who dispossessed him and scored, was in close enough attendance that with his quickness, you had to have the center backs sprayed at angles where Matt can play it first time or take one quick touch and zip it to him. Instead, he took a tempo, sort of just got wrong-footed on the grass and showed enough of the ball. And so then once a team like that is that organized and that good defensively, they were averaging just like 0.72, 0.73 goals against per game coming in, just 8 goals in 11 games coming in, right? So this is a tough defensive Nashville team, and they look very, very structured, very organized. Their spacing out of possession was as good as we've seen all year. And, you know, without putting in a lot of dirty tackles and so forth, they were able to be around the ball a lot. So Carlos Heel was on the ball, but he had a hard time getting through this sea of yellow and blue clad Nashville guys. It was notable, you know, that they just couldn't find the feet of Dor Turgeman. And the things that Carlos was having to try, like very difficult, you know, sort of weighted over the top of dipping balls or no look surprise through balls, that made it hard for Turgeman to get his timing. And people were, you know, online, people, you know, very critical, right? Like it goes from wonderful to terrible very quickly. We've seen it with this, you know, the other teams in town too, right? So some of the analysis is spot on and a lot of it is reactive and maybe, you know, over, you know, sort of exaggerated. But it was true that the Revs struggled to put together attacks with, you know, a sharp point at the end of them. And the couple of, like, Carlos rushed a shot with his left foot that went wide. He played this brilliant ball over the top for, I believe, it was Peyton Miller on the overlap. But Andy Nahar made a really good play, you know, just skimmed off of his head. There was that no-look pass I just referenced by Carlos trying to play Turgeman in. All in the first, you know, half hour or so before Nashville got the first goal. And then, you know, once the first goal comes in, the Revs come out a little bit more, commit more numbers for it. It was just a fluky thing, the second one, which came like 7 minutes after the first goal. And then a beautifully executed set piece for the third one. I don't think the distance between the teams is as great. And Marko Mitrović, the Revs coach, said as much. In the 4-1 loss to Nashville down there in the season opener, it looked like there was a huge gulf in class between the two teams. And despite the scoreline, if you watched the game, you wouldn't say that after the second meeting last night. But the big difference was, now both teams were missing, you know, key guys, right? Like you'd say that, you know, they were missing Surge, their leading scorer, Taxeth and Yazbek, and the Revs still without Leo Campana. Ceballos is available on the bench, but hasn't been starting because I think he's going to go back in. Like that's just my gut after last night, because for once, help me out here.
Kohler
didn't play a perfect game. Yeah. I just had too many names in my head. Ethan Kohler's been great, but you know, I think Ceballos goes back in. You might even put Kohler in the midfield because, you know, he's such a good passer and so clean, anticipates very well. But that wasn't really the issue either. You know, I think Polster, you know, who was so good coming off the bench in the win over Philly, struggled with the pace. It looked like he's just getting back up to speed fitness-wise. He wasn't bad, but in a couple of big moments, you know, you could see he had a little bit of ring rust. So I don't know. It looked like a butt-kicking, right? But I don't – you know, expected goals were very close, depending on which box score, you know, you consult different – you know, models, but they were, you know, the Reds had more possession. I think they won the corner kick battle or it was close. You know, it wasn't terrible, but Nashville, just with the clinical way they went about their business and the way they capitalized on their opportunities, that was, you know, there was a big gulf there because the Reds were not ruthless in that way. And Nashville looked very comfortable punishing the Reds when they had the opportunity.
Yeah, and as you've alluded to, Brad, right, we know Nashville's good. I mean, God, they were just in the final four there of the CONCACAF Champions Cup there, losing to T-Grace as well. So we know they're talented, but I'm interested. You said something just now that sparked my interest because you did mention that you feel that the gap between them closed in the last two games. As a Revs fan, I couldn't agree more, especially with your analysis of everything that happened last night, the goals, etc. What about the Revs has changed since that matchup with Nashville that you think has closed that gap with them?
Well, I think it's the comfort playing in Mitrovic's system, his way of playing. I actually think, you know, again, it's hard to say this the morning after a 3-0 loss at home, but I think the way they played in some ways, like Max, like other than the finishing part, because they really didn't, you know, they really didn't test the goalkeeper last night, but like they're playing the way Marco wants them to play. And then it's just a question of, like, do you have the right guys out there? There's no Luca Langone out there. So, Peyton Miller really tortured them down the left side, but they did a good job of shutting off the action on that side. And, the Reds didn't really have a true winger out there because it was Al-Hassan Youssef, who's much better in the middle, and it's been, you know, he roams all over. But when, you know, so they kept ball from coming down there. They were willing to live with James Sands coming down the right more. And he did get down the right. And he did have a couple of cutback crosses, but you know, the quality of his service could have been better. And he's not, he's quick, but he's not the speed merchant that Miller is. And, you know, I don't really what to say. I think that the bottom line is that they need just like a little bit more out there. If they had Leo Campana as their target man, pull Dor Turgeman wide or push Miller out to left wing, have Sands at left back, at Eli Feingold, who's been injured, get him back at right back, and then they play the same way. Who knows? Maybe they score first. Nashville has to come out more, and then it's a whole different game, right? If Nashville gives up the first goal, then they can't. It's not like they packed it in, parked the bus, sure, but they were so structured. They still are dangerous because, right, with Hami Mukhtar out there, team like that can counter, even if it's like a semi-counter, even if it's like a high-numbers counter-attack. You know, it's not like a fast break 3-on-2 kind of thing, but like they're just really good in transition. And so, you know, the Reds have to be better in that respect. I think that, you know, if you have Youssef and Reigns in the middle, as opposed to Polster just coming back from injury, maybe that, you know, the first goal doesn't happen. I don't know. But I think the Reds' confidence on the ball, like that, we were commenting in the first half hour, the Revs look like a team that are friends with the ball. They were so confident coming in, having won all six games at home. You can tell when a team is playing not with like unreasonable swagger, but just with confidence and comfort with their passing and the patterns of play. And success begets success, to use a cliche, but it's true. And so that's what I think the difference is, Taylor, is that the Revs, you know, who really suffered from a crisis of confidence at the end of the previous two seasons, because they knew that talent-wise, they're better than what their record showed. Now, the loss last night, notwithstanding, like, that's a first-place team in the East for a reason. Like, they know they can ball, and they just need to sharpen a few things. And, you know, like, you know, you're not going to win any games you don't score, right? So, yeah, but they're a much better soccer team than they were 6 months ago.
Yeah, well, it's funny you bring up goal scoring.
Or even 4 months ago, to your point, when they played.
Yeah, well, it's funny you bring up goal scoring. Trust me, Brad, for the high school team that I coach this year, we didn't score many goals, and I promise you there wasn't many wins either, so I learned that as well the hard way as a coach this year.
Yeah, well, you know? that's the math, right?
Yeah, like, yep, it is.
You draw a lot of games.
It doesn't matter if you only give up one goal, if you can't score one yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure. And, of course, the loss last night to Nashville did cut off the momentum, of course, that had been gained over the weekend with the win against Philadelphia Union. Another comeback win where New England had conceded first there. But at least that match did continue kind of a little bit of a pattern that New England had, you know, maybe a little bit of a slow start or concede first, but find a way to dig themselves out of it.
The conceding part is not good. It certainly makes it, you know, a comeback is a thrilling narrative from a sort of, you know, sports drama perspective. If you're the Revs, you know, their coaching staff, you'd prefer to do it in a different way, have a different narrative arc. But the bottom line is this: they've come back from losing positions four times to win in seven games where they've given up the first goal this year out of 12 matches. And three of those they trailed at halftime. And I believe I didn't look last night, but I think they're still tied for the league lead comebacks where you trail at halftime. Good to have that resilience and self-belief to do it. You don't want to do it too often. What I would say is this: the Revs are superior to Philly. Philly are playing a very rough and tumble style right now, sort of an exaggerated version of the New York Red Bulls model, the system that their head coach, Bradley Carnell, came from, which is, you know, a lot of high pressure, relentless, up in your shirt running, launching it into the channels and in the middle third of the field to contest 50-50s and winning second balls. And it's not the beautiful game, you know. And sometimes it's, you know, like you like an exciting physical contest, but when a team has some quality, you feel bad for these pros who worked all their lives to try to play a game. You know, I've changed. Like, I used to be more old school, like win the fist fight in the alley. Now I like to see guys who can use the ball. That's what the sport's about, right? Like, you don't want to stand off and let people just dance. You got to get stuck in, but you want to see, good players get the ball down on the deck, do creative things with the skills they have and play that kind of game. That's not what Philly's doing. What the Revs knew, and I think this is what's hard for fans too, is to have the patience to understand that what the Reds were kind of doing was a little bit of the old Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope. Let them punch themselves out, right? Even the best conditioned professionals are going to get gassed playing the way Bradley Carnell's asking them to do, even with five subs coming off the bench. You see it all over. And when I started covering soccer, over 25 years ago, I think it was Real Betis against Real Madrid. Or maybe it was a small Spanish club playing one of the giants, and they were trying to press them to death. And my broadcast partner is like, no team can do that for 90 minutes. Nobody can. It's just you run yourselves out. It may be why they ended up coming with 90 minutes as the length for a standard game. Because, like, the best conditioned guys can do it for 75, but we're going to discourage that by making the game an hour and a half long, you know? And so, you know, I'm being a little reductive here, but, you know, the Revs sort of they played a patient waiting game, and then you have to convert the chances to make it happen. But you got Carlos Hill at the wheel, and the watershed of that game was honestly Mamadou Fofana, who made team the match day, I think, because he made a spectacular play. It seems like for defenders to make, you have to score a goal or do something like goal line block that means something. When Fofana could make it most weeks, where they have a shutout because he's so clean and efficient, positionally sound and athletic, and all these things. But if it goes to 2-0, the Reds probably don't come back and win that. They might draw, but 2-0, they're in a deeper, much deeper hole, statistically, psychologically, all that. So, in the 59th minute, Fofana, the ball gets behind Turner. Fofana clears it off the line. They score 2 minutes later, and they end up winning. So that was the story there. But they certainly deserved it, and you felt from the opening whistle like they're the better team, and that's what the scoreline reflected.
Absolutely, and of course, heading into this weekend, no rest for the Wicked, a midweek match, and on to Minnesota United. What can you tell us about the Loons, Brad?
Yeah, that still doesn't – I skied Loon Mountain growing up, but when I hear the Loons, I expect it. The mental hospital, paddy wagon.
And the loon but is the like a bird for Maine, too. Loons are synonymous with Maine.
I think the crazy people are named after the bird, right? Not vice versa. But I expect 11 dudes in straight jackets. but that's just my comedy brain. But they lost last night 1-0 to Colorado, but they had 1.7 expected goals. They're an aggressive team. Their wingbacks, create overloads out wide. They released Thomas Rodriguez for the World Cup, and he's not coming back. But they still have good athleticism. They have Kelvin Yeboah. Their biggest issue lately, reportedly, is finishing chances, not creating them. So. But that will come good eventually. And so I don't think, now with 30 teams and, the imbalanced schedule, you don't see Minnesota, sometimes these teams, you don't see them for over 2 years at a time. And so they can go through, several cycles of the styles of play, coaches, players, and so forth. So I'm just boning up on them. But I will say this, if the Reds can get Luca Langone back, or if they can get Eli Feingold, I would like to see the Reds play a front foot game. If you have Miller and Langone on the wings, or you get Campana won't be fit to go 90, even if he's ready to get back in the squad. But, just get more pressure down the wings, not only because the service into the box creates goal scoring opportunities. When the Reds are really flying down those flanks, and they have to, they being the opposing teams, have to track those guys, then, A, they can't get forward the way Minnesota wants to. But then it also creates more space for Carlos Hill to operate in the half spaces and in those sort of, spaces between the lines. Because, if they need double-team help down in the corner, whether it's Sands or Miller or Langone or whoever, then – there's more space, and Carlos just needs that one tempo to take that, second touch, pick up his head and pick a guy out for the splitter or the, the curling ball in or even a shot of his own. And so like I think the Reds can hand it to Minnesota, but Minnesota's good. Like, they're in sixth place in the West. They're not a bad side at all. And so it's not going to be easy. You want to go into this World Cup break with two more games to go, if they could get 4 points even out of the remaining six at issue, I think they'll go into a 2-month break feeling good about themselves. It's going to be a tricky one after that. Charlotte, we'll talk about that next week. But, so you got to bag the three Saturday night at home.
And speaking of Charlotte, of course, they're the host of the 2026 MLS All-Star Game a little after the World Cup on July the 29th, and voting is out there right now, so you can send some Revs players to Charlotte there for the MLS All-Star Game.
Yeah, don't boo. Vote. Carlos Hill has to be an all-star, right? So, that should be the first. I'm not expressing any bias here, obviously. But the guy's producing now, too. He's got, 4 goals, 4 assists. Always among the leaders in chances created, and certainly among the leaders in, just playing to my earlier point, skillful, beautiful soccer, even under a lot of physical pressure. You know, like that's the mark of a great who can do it, you know, difficult tasks at speed under pressure, right? That's the definition of a really good player. And Carlos Gil does it on repeat every week. And, you know, however long this lasts with him, like it's just been a privilege and a pleasure. I think I told you this before, but you should have him on to discuss the Boston Celtics sometimes too. He really is. He's just like he's a great sportsman. He's a great gentleman, and he's also a fierce competitor. I think Luca Langone, with his stats production, has a good shout to be an All Star. Matt Turner, last night, notwithstanding, given the season he's had through, you know, first 11 games, you know, leading the league, and, you know, goals prevented and expected goals against, all that stuff. I think save percentage, he's still top of the league. Maybe not after last night. I haven't seen calibrated stats, but those would be your leading three. But Fofana also has a good shout. He's made team of the week, I believe, twice, if not three times. I should have this in front of me, but like those are your four leading guys right there. Carlos Gil, Luca Langone, Matt Turner, Mamadou Fofana, not necessarily in that order. But vote for whoever you want. There are 30 teams, a lot of guys around the league. And, yeah, like it's they're playing the Liga MX All-Stars. So USA-Mexico should be fun. Feels like a long time off of the World Cup between now and then. But voting's open. Get on it.
Get on it indeed. MLSsoccer.com/vote is where to go do it. Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice, thanks so much for spending some time with us again, buddy. We'll be listening to you on Saturday.
Enjoy talking to you guys always.
You got it. Again, Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice. We'll be right back to finish off hour two. It's Middays with Mannix and Mannix.